Okay. So last time I was I defined the Chevalier groups. So Chevalier group G, the Chevalier group. So we had so this is generated by this kind of elements E alpha T, the exponential map. So T is in so let's say Chevalier group over F, let's say number field, then just take an algebraic closure. So it's algebraic closure. Okay, so E alpha was the very particular choice of a Chevalier basis. And we defined H alpha. So we defined W alpha. W alpha is the Weyl group element attached to the roots. This will be E alpha T, E minus alpha minus T inverse. Okay, let's take a none. So E alpha T and H alpha T was okay, so this is exactly the chorus, basically. This is alpha check T. It will be the chorus. Chorus attached to alpha. Okay. So for the Chevalier groups, we can describe parabolic subgroups very explicitly. So we fix a Borel subgroup. Fix a Borel subgroup. So last time, I think I mentioned that fixing a Borel subgroup basically means that we are fixing a fundamental system, okay, because these are all conjugate. So basically we are fixing, so i.e. we fix a fundamental system. Let me denote by delta. So we are fixing a simple root system. So we have, this is let me denote by positive roots. We are fixing a fundamental system. Okay, so once you fix that, then the theorem is there is a one-tone correspondence. Basically we can describe so-called standard parabolic subgroups. Standard parabolic subgroups are basically parabolic subgroups which contains the fixed Borel subgroups. So one-tone correspondence between parabolic subgroups containing the Borel subgroup, so we have B, we denote by B delta here. So we can attach Borel subgroup, B delta, and subset, let me denote by delta 1, subset of simple roots. So there's a one-tone correspondence there. So, and we can describe this parabolic subgroups P corresponding to P delta 1. We can describe very explicitly. So P delta 1 will be G. Let me use this notation. T C1 U phi1 plus. So here, phi1 is the basically the subsystem, the roots generated by this delta 1 intersection with the phi. So phi1 will be a sub-root system of phi, and T phi1, so this is the this will be the phi1 prop to 0. So basically that means that this is a connected component. So this is connected component. Component of the subtorus, of T annihilated by phi1, and so so this is basically the kernel of alpha in phi1. This is a, take a connected component. So when I take that, it means connected component. You can just take the delta 1. It doesn't matter. Okay, and u phi 1 plus. So this one is according to this morning's terminology. So this will be the Levy subgroup. And this will be a unipotent radical, okay, according to say Jim's lecture. So this will be the unipotent radical. So this will be the product of root subgroup generated by U alpha. Here U alpha was, so U alpha is the subgroup generated by this one-dimensional so this will be the one-dimensional root subgroup, and you just take a product, okay, and G phi1, so G phi1 is the subgroup generated by U alpha, where alpha is in phi1. Okay, so this U is, you just take root subgroup, product root subgroup, which is not in phi1, and G alpha 1 is the subgroup generated by that. And so the notice that, so this thing, this Levy subgroup, G phi1 times T phi1, this becomes exactly the centralizer of T phi1 in G. So this is exactly the Levy subgroup. Levy subgroup of P, and so this node 1 and second, and the intersection is finite. So it's a finite, and 3. This group is the derived group. So is the derived group of so let me denote centralizer, let me denote this by in the, let me use this notation G Z T phi1. Yes, so the derived group of the centralizer. Okay, so according to this correspondence, the Borel cell group corresponds to the empty cell. So Borel cell group is corresponding to the empty cell. And if delta 1, so this is a note. So note this. So if delta 1 is delta minus alpha, so alpha is in. So if delta 1 is, then in this case, this Parabolic subgroup is called the maximal. So this is called maximal Parabolic subgroup. And you can see from this description, you can see clearly that, if delta 1 is delta 2, you can see that the P delta 1 will include, it will be included in P delta 1, delta 2. You can see that, you can see this inclusion relation. So, if it's the, so the, that one will be the biggest non-proper, proper parabolic subgroups. Okay, so let me explain this with two examples. So let's look at the parabolic subgroup in two examples. So I think I explained this, let's say symplectic group. So in symplectic group case, the fundamental system is type CN. So this is, they usually denote by E1 minus E2, E2 minus E3, EN minus 1 minus EN, and 2EN. So this is a fundamental system. So now let's take delta 1 to be delta minus, let's get rid of this one, 2EN. So then let's see what kind of parabolic subgroups you get. So in this case, the maximal torus is T1, Tn, Tn inverse, T1 inverse. So this is a maximal torus. Okay. And so if you compute the, intersection of all the kernel, so TP1 will be the kernel of all these roots. So E1 minus E2, in order to be in the kernel, that means that T1 and T2 should be the same. So that means that this TP1 will be T inverse. So that will be TP1. So that's the TP1. And if you calculate the centralizer, the centralizer will be exactly, that will be just the centralizer of this one. Centralizer of that one will be just the GLN. So that will be A and something here, which, you know, this 0, 0 here. And in order that this belongs to SP2N, so then this N has to be minus J A transpose inverse J here. J is the 1, 1, 0, 0. So I mean, this symplectic group is defined by, so this is defined by set of G in GL2N such that the G transpose J minus J 0, 0 G is J minus J 0, 0. So that's the definition of simplex group. So the J is the defining matrix. So A is GLN. So GLN. So this is isomorphic to GLN. GLN. And if you compute the U, U phi 1 plus, so that will be the roots, all the positive roots, which will get rid of the roots spanned by these roots. So that means that you are getting rid of, so if you look at the so then basically you will come up to this kind of matrix here, some kind of X. So X is some kind of a, not symmetric according to that, but somehow this will be some kind of matrix here. So the uniform radical looks like this. So this is called a Ziegler parabolic. It's commonly called Ziegler parabolic. Okay, and next one, let me look at more complicated one. This one I'm going to use later on in the proof of functorial relative symmetry cube. So let's look at the exceptional group of type E6. So E6 thinking diagram is thinking diagram looks like this. So let me label it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean in the Bourbaki they label differently. They label it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They label it that way. But I guess okay. Let me just do it this way. Okay. I mean so then the you can read off the Kartan matrix from this thinking diagram. Basically, so thinking diagram is 2, and the diagonal will be 2. And you have -1 if there is a line there. So 1 and 2 there is a line, so you get -1, -1. And 2 and 3 you have a line there, you have -1. And 3 and 4 you get -1 here. And 3 and 6 there is a line there, so that means that you'll have -1, -1 here. And the 4 and 5 there is a line there, so 4 and 5 line there. And 5 and 6 there is no line, so that means 0. So 0, 0, 0, 0. Everywhere else is 0. So that's the Kartan matrix. Okay. So let's look at the maximal parabolic subgroup, which corresponds to by derivative of this root. So let's look at delta 1 is delta minus alpha 3. So let's look at the maximal parabolic subgroup. So this is parabolic subgroup I'm going to use later. Let's look at the structure of this parabolic, maximal parabolic subgroup. So T phi 1, so that's the connected component of the subtorus. So that, so this will be the, so how, what's the structure? So this will be one dimensional space because it's a maximal parabolic. So let me denote by AT. So AT, so T is in F, non-zero element. So if you compute that, any torus element in the Chevalier group case, any torus element can be written in this way, H alpha 1, T 1, H alpha 6, T 6. So any torus, so this is a torus element. So Ti belongs to non-zero element of the algebraic closure. Okay. And so you compute that. Using this formula, you can compute explicitly. You just apply roots, let's say alpha 1, for example. If you apply roots alpha 1, and according to this Kartan matrix, if you apply alpha 1, you get T1 square and H alpha 2, T2. So if you remember that this is a coroot. So alpha 1 check will be T1 square. And alpha 2 check will be -1. So you get T2 inverse. So this has to be 1. And then you go on, except alpha 3. Okay? And so if you compute that, then you get the following formula. So this will be, so AT will be, you get the following formula. H alpha 1 T square, H alpha 2 T to the 4th, H alpha 3 T to the 6th, H alpha 4 T to the 4th, H alpha 5 T square, H alpha 6 T to the cube. So you get this express formula. So that's, we got this part, and this part is the derived group of the Lebesgue group, and we use the following lemma. So lemma, the short lemma, is that if G is simply connected, then the derived group. The derived group, the Levy, so G, P, 1, is simply connected. So in our case, we know what the, so P1 will be root system generated by this one, and root system generated by this one, and root system generated by this one. So we know what the simply connected groups are. So in this case, so we know that GP1 is isomorphic to, so that's the root system of type A2. So we know what the simply connected group of type A2 is. That's SL3. So SL3 times the one attached to 6 is SL2. So we have that result. So now let's make this isomorphism very concrete. Okay. So let's make it concrete. So we identify TP1 with GL1. So GL1. And MGP1 with SL3, SL2, SL2, SL3. So we identify in the following way. We identify the following way. So H alpha 1 T, H alpha 2 T square. So we identify, so we have, let me draw a diagram here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So this one, we are identifying this with SL3. So SL3, we identify that this element will go to the following matrix. You get T, T, T to the negative 2. So remember that when you have SL2 here, 1, 2, so H alpha 1, so H alpha 1 will go to T1 inverse. Okay? Now H alpha 2, T2, H alpha 2, T2 will sends to T2 inverse. Okay? So that's how your isomorphism is. So if you, so this element, we let them go this way. So we are identifying this SL3. And same thing with this one. Now we go, I mean, there are identification problems, but now for our case, let's go backwards. So let's look at H alpha 4 T square, H alpha 5 T. So let's, again, you go to T to the negative 2. Okay? I mean, this is the, what? So it's the second component. So we go that way, and then H alpha 6 T goes to T T inverse on the last component. So that's the identification. Okay. I mean, if you look at the Langlands Euler product book, so he this is the we have to switch this. So he, according to his convention, you always identification always go this way. So actually, I have to take the inverse of that in Langlands notation. But this is this will do it. So if you look at this concrete identification, so then the Levy subgroup. So Levy. So let me write down as M times U. So this is Levy decomposition. So Levy. So this is almost direct product. So this is almost direct product of ZP1 times TP1. So this is isomorphic to GL1 times SL3 divide by, so we are identifying that, so we have to divide by the intersection. So let's denote by the intersection S. So S will be the intersection of GC1. So according to this identification, the intersection will look like this. It look like this. So you get AT T square I3 T square I3 T cube I2, where T to the 6 is 1. So here I3 is the identity matrix, 3 by 3 identity matrix. So this will be the concrete realization of the this Levy subgroup. Okay. So what we need later, what you need later is that, so this looks like a, so we need a GL3. So how do you get GL3? So we look at define a map. We define a map F prime. So we define a map TP1 times GP1. So we define the following map. So we get to GL1, 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 so we get AT, X, Y, Z, it sends to T square, T square, T cube, X, Y, Z. So these are the rational homomorphism, and if you divide by S, so that will induce. So it will induce a map F. So this is trivial on the this S. So it will induce a map from M. Induce a map from M to GL3. GL3, GL2. So here, remember that GLN is isomorphic to GL1 times SLN divided by nth root of unity. Nth root. So GL1 is the center. So if you use that, then you can get the rational homomorphism. Okay? So what we are going to do, such that, so we can give concretely, we can look at the image of H alpha 3 T. The image of this map becomes exactly 1, 1, T, 1, 1, T, 1, T. You get we get this kind of map. So what we are going to do later is that we are going to put cuspidal representation of GL3 here, another cuspidal representation of GL3, and cuspidal representation of GL2. We can induce that using this map F, so we can get cuspidal representation of the Levy subgroup M. Okay? And then we can make Eisenstein series, and if you look at constant term, then you get the triple product error function of GL2, GL3, GL2, and GL3, GL3, GL2. Okay? So that's how you get the triple product error function. Okay, so I mean, these are pretty cumbersome, but there is not a way to avoid this kind of complications. All right, so we do the same thing with E7 also. With E7, so E7 will be exactly the same thing. So we look at the maximal parabolic subgroup, which corresponds to by getting rid of this simple rules. So we do the exactly same step. Then you get GL3 here. We have GL4 and GL2. We have. So you get the triple product error function again. Okay, so this is the process you get the maximal parabolic subgroups. Okay, any questions so far? That's right, yeah. That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. There are only finitely many possibilities. Okay, so now I finished section one. Now let me move on to the L groups. Okay, so let me define the L groups, section two. So since we have all the definitions of roots and chorus, we can define L groups very easily. So let the G be split reductive group. And the T is the maximal torus. And so we had a notion of root datum. So we have X star T phi X rho star T and phi check. So root datum. Okay. So this is the group of characters of T, and phi is the root system. So if it is a reductive, then you have, this will be a root system, not of this one, but you have to divide by the center. Okay. But anyway, you have this root, we have the notion of root datum. Okay. And, so phi is the set of roots. So definition, so the L group, definition is simple. So the complex group, the complex group whose root datum is, so basically you just switch these two, switch this. So root datum is X star T phi check X upper star T phi. So we just switch the group of characters to group of co-characters is called the L group. L group of G. And it's denoted by by, let me use this notation, L G. L G. Okay. In general, you have to consider the action of Galois group here, but since we are doing a split group, so we don't have to consider action of Galois group. So let me just use this notation. Okay. So first, suppose G is semi-simple. So let's look at the semi-simple case. So in this case, so recall the simply connectedness. So G is simply connected. If the group of core characters, this is the Z span of the chorus, and adjoint, if the group of characters is the Z span of the roots. So if you look at our definition, so you can see that the group and L group will be switched. Simply connected and adjoint will be switched. If you look at this definition. So if G is simply connected, so hence G is simply connected if and only if the L group is adjoint. And G is adjoint if and only if this is simply connected. So, and the root system changes, okay? So root system changes and simply connected goes to adjoint. So, this is the following chart. So you get SLN. So that's the simply connected, and then you'll go to adjoint group. So that's the PGLNC. And simply SP2N. Now your root system, this is the type CN. So then you'll go to the group of type BN. So basically dual root system. So that's the SO, 2N plus 1C. And SO2N plus 1, so this will go to SP2NC, and SO2N. So it's not simply connected, it's somewhere in the middle, and that will go to somewhere in the middle, SP2NC. And simply connected E6, E7, so this will go to adjoint E6C, E7C. Because E6 and E7, there are two classes, simply connected one and adjoint one. And the type G2, F4, E8, so for that one, this is simply connected and adjoint simultaneously. Center is trivial. So this will go to just to itself. So this is the center is trivial. So the adjoint group, simply connected and adjoint group are the same. So these are both adjoint and simply connected.
Can
So E8, that will be, you have to put one more here. So it will be GL2, GL3, and GL5. GL5. So that's like 1, 2, 3, 4. So SL5. So if you do this stuff, so you get GL3, GL5 here. So you'll have a rational map, so you can get triple product R function of GL2, GL3, GL5. Yes, so you get triple convolution of pi, let's say, and the symmetric square and the symmetric fourth, like that. It'll be entire if you twist by some higher, so yeah, module, yeah, that's right. So there will be, yeah, there will be holomorphic set at 0 and 1, something like that. But this is just a symmetric tau L function, symmetric alpha square, alpha to the fourth, so it will be 7. And then, so basically this you can decompose as a product of symmetric power functions. So the way you get symmetric ninth is you look at E8 and you look at E8, so you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So you look at the maximal parabolic subgroup attached to delta 1, delta minus, you look at alpha 4. You get rid of this roots and you look at the maximal parabolic subgroups. So then the Levy subgroup is, this is like GL5 and this is GL4. Okay. So if you have a Levy subgroup, so you can construct rational homomorphism from GL5, M to GL5 cross GL4. So you put symmetric fourth here, and you have a symmetric cube. And if you calculate the Eisenstein series, then you will get, so you will have, more explicitly, you will get symmetric fourth here. And then you have symmetric cube, twist by central inverse of that. Then the resulting L function you will get, okay, so let me just do pi 1 and pi 2. So you get pi 1, pi 2, the extra square of GL5 tensor with rho 4. So you'll get this kind of L functions. So extra square of GL5 and then product of GL4, okay? And so if you specify this symmetric fourth and symmetric cube, then this becomes symmetric ninth L function. And then lower symmetric power function.
So symmetric nine doesn't really come out of the constant term of an Eisenstein.
No, no.
It's kind of concocted.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's the limit, yeah. Okay, so this is what I'm gonna do in the in a few lectures. I'm gonna define Eisenstein series, and you can see that this kind of R function shows up in a normalizing factor of the intertwining of the. The algorithm, definition of algorithm is complex. Okay, so this is a semi simple case, but if it is reductive like a GLN, then it will become more complicated. So Suppose G is reductive. Like a GLN, such as. So it's become more, calculation of the algo is a little bit more complicated. So we can use the following lemma. Lemma due to Borel. So if you look at his paper, so the derived group of the L group is simply connected. If and only if the center is trivial. Center of G is connected. Okay. So using this lemma, we can compute the L group in many cases. So if G is GLN, the center is connected. So the derived group of the L group will be simply connected. So in this case, the L group is just GLN C. And another one, the Borel computes is GSP 2N, the symplectic similitude group. So then the center is connected here. So the derived group, the derived group of the L group. So this is the root system is pi Cn. So the derived group, the root system will be pi Bn. And the simply connected group will be just a twofold cover. So spin group. So the derived group will be spin group. Spin 2n plus 1 C. And so you look at how the center goes to, so then you can see that this will be just the G spin 2n plus 1 C. So that will be the L group. So in this particular case, in the particulation of n equals 2, there is an accidental isomorphism. Spin 5 is isomorphic to SP4, so it's a low dimensional accident. So in this case, so the L group of GSP4 is basically GSP4. So this is just an accident. Okay, any questions? Okay, so now let me move on to the cuspidal representations. Okay, so this morning Jim talked about cuspidal representation, and he will talk about it more next time in detail. So let me just write down the definitions, and then he will justify more. So So G is the split reductive group. Defined over a number field. So F will be a number field. And A is the ring of Adels. So I'm going to just talk about the cuspid representation as a subspace of L2 space. So omega will be the Grossen, just take a Grossen character of F. So we define this L2 space, GF to GA, is basically square integrable space. So you get the set of phi defined over this space such that phi z g is omega z phi g, if z is in the center, and this is a square integrable. So this is the Hilbert space of L2 space, which Jim talked about. So now, the L0, this is the subspace of cusp forms. So this will be the, so let me denote this one L2 omega. So L2 omega, such that this is, it satisfies the cuspidality condition. So you get NF and A, phi and G, DN is 0. So here, for any unipotent radical, radicals N. So this is the space of cusp forms. So GA acts on this space by right translation, so it will be right regular representation. And so this Jim is going to talk about next week. So this theorem. So this is theorem by Gelfand, Piatek, Shapiro, and I think also Harder also got this result. That so okay. So let me. So R. So under the right regular representation. Regular translation R by the elements of GA, the L, this space, so becomes a unitary representation, becomes a unitary representation. And the theorem is that this unitary representation can be decomposed discretely. So R is a direct sum. So direct sum of irreducible unitary representations of GA. So you have a direct sum decomposition here. M pi. So m pi is the multiplicity. Okay. So I'm gonna just, so in this course, in my course, I will be just dealing with the irreducible constituents, which shows up in this decomposition. So I'll call them cuspid representations. So we call the irreducible constituents. Cuspid representations. Okay, so Jim will talk about this next time more in detail.
I think as far as
Oh, the function field. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. So basically, main problem in one of the main problem in automorphic form is to find the multiplicity of n pi. So that's the main problem in trace formula and things like that. What kind of representation shows up in that decomposition? Okay. So in GLN case, so this is theorem of Schleicher. So this is multiplicity one result. Multiplicity one result. So for GLN case, if G is GLN, the n pi, the multiplicity is always one. So for those shows up in the decomposition, multiplicity is always one. And that's not true in other groups. There are other groups which multiplicity is higher. And so another theorem, which I think is due to Flath, which Jim will talk about, and he talked about this morning. So when you have a cuspidal representation, so let pi be a cuspidal representation of G, so then there is so if you restrict to k finite vectors, then you have the following decompositions, and then there is a non-unique decomposition pi, so there is a tensor product, and you have to make it more precise. So simply I'll leave that to Jim. Like, so you have to make it more precise by restricting to k finite vectors. So and this is also restricted tensor product. So where pi v is an irreducible unitary representation of this local group for all of v. And for almost all of v, it's a finite prime, phi v is called spherical. It's a spherical representation. Or sometimes they, in the literature, they call class one representation. Spherical basically means that pi v has a vector fixed by the action of G or V. So it is a vector. So this is a one-dimensional space. The vector fixed by G, this maximal compact group, is a one-dimensional space. So when you, this is a choice which made it non-unique. So this decomposition depends on the choice of the vector. But the equivalence class of this representation will be unique. So so it is the choice. Choices made for these vectors. Which leads to the decomposition. Pi, the tensor product in a non-unique way. But the equivalence class is uniquely determined. But the equivalence class. Are all unique. Okay, so now I'm ready to define automorphic representation, an automorphic function. Okay, so one thing before I do that, one thing I have to do is for this physical representation, these are uniquely determined by a semi-simple conjugate class. So let me write down as a proposition. So I will we'll explain later. We'll explain this. So I will explain this proposition later using principal series representation or induced representation. So a spherical representation is uniquely determined by its semi-simple conjugate class. Class, so TV in the L group. Actually, you can choose element in the semi-simple conjugate class in the torus, because it can be diagonalized. So we call that sometimes Satake parameter or Heke conjugate class. So for example, so let me just give just an example. So if G is GLN and pi V, the spherical representation will be uniquely determined by its conjugate class, namely, so you just diagonal element, alpha 1, alpha n. So conjugate class of this diagonal element. So these are uniquely attached to that. And another proposition I'll just mention in relation to multiplicity one result is this is called the strong multiplicity one result. By Jacke and Schleicher. If there are two representations, so pi 1, pi is pi v, and the pi prime, if there are two cusped representations, and two cusped representations, and these local components are equivalent for almost all places, for almost all V. So especially the Satake parameter, I mean the Heke semi-simple conjugate class are the same. Okay. Then pi 1, pi and pi prime are equivalent. So if it is equivalent because of the multiplicity one result, then means that they have to be equal. So by multiplicity one result. This is GLN. Okay. The representation of GLN. Of course, this is not true in other groups. Okay, so let me just state the example of cusped representations. Okay, so n equals 2, and f equals q. So f equals q, and g is GL2. Jim talked about this. So in this case, there are two classes of representations. Two classes of cusped representations. So first one is cusped representations attached to the holomorphic Heke eigenform, holomorphic Hecke eigen form. Okay, so let me denote this one by pi f. So there are, Jim talked about the standard recipe. I guess he'll probably talk about it later on. So there are standard recipe to attach a cluster representation to holomorphic Hecke eigenform. And so especially you have a, you can write in the, Fourier expansion in this way. So you get n equals 1 to infinity AFn n to the k minus 1 2 e to the 2 pi inz. So here AF1 normalize it this way. Okay. So okay, k is the weight. So eigenform of weight k. And so you can write this as a tensor product decomposition, pi v. Okay, so the Satake parameter, so pi p, so almost all primes, so there you can attach semi-simple conjugate class, so alpha of v, beta of v. So for almost all p. So the relationship between this semi-simple conjugate class and this Fourier coefficients is that AFP will be exactly the trace of the semi-simple conjugate class. So this is the relationship. Okay, and the second class is what Ramamurthy talked about, the mass form. So you can do the exactly the same thing. The second cuspidal representations attached to mass form, mass cusp form. So let me remind you what they, so pi is pi f. So f is the mass form is that is an eigenfunction of Laplacian, eigenfunction of the Laplace operator. So delta is minus y square. So let me So eigenfunction means that let me write down the eigenvalue in this way. So here, S will be either imaginary or S is real and absolute value is less than 1. So when you have Fourier expansion again, you have the following Fourier expansion. So here WZ is the Bessel function. So it's the Bessel function. Okay. So again, the same thing. This is the basically the trace, trace of the Hecke semi-simple conjugate class. And so let me just write down again. The Ramanujan conjecture says that that Hecke eigenvalues are all 1. I mean all the finite primes. So this is the Ramanujan conjecture. And the Selberg conjecture is that this eigenvalue in mass form case, these eigenvalues are all imaginary. So S imaginary. So this thing doesn't show up. Okay, so this is true for the one attached to Hackett eigenforms, holomorphic forms, but this is still open in mass form case. Alright, so let me define the holomorphic L functions and I can finish this today. Okay, so now let pi, so let me just, so now I'll use this tensor product decomposition be a cuspidal representation of GA. So let me use, and let R to be the finite dimensional representation of the L group, the finite dimensional representation. So this is finite dimensional representation. So now we can attach holomorphic L function on these two data. Okay? So first we can define local L functions. So for almost all V, so almost all V. So let's say V is not in S. So S is the finite set of places. Including the Archimedean ones. Archimedean ones. And for almost all V, the pi V is spherical. Okay. So according to our proposition, so I'm going to explain this later. So we can attach a semi-simple conjugate class. So the pi V is uniquely determined by its semi-simple conjugate class. So let me denote by TV. And this will be the, you can take TV to be in the L group of the torus. Okay? So then we can form this L function. You can form this L function. L S pi V R. R will be the determinant of RTV, and QV minus S. So this will be a matrix in M by M matrix here. So you just take a characteristic polynomial of that and take an inverse. So this is the definition of local L function, local Langlands L functions. So for example, more concretely, let's say pi, so pi p is the cuspidal representation of GL2. And pi v is attached to this diagonal matrix. Let's look at the n plus 1 dimensional representation. So let me denote by, this is what Ramamurthy defined there. So this is the symmetric nth power representation. So this is the symmetric nth power representation. So for example, in this case, the alpha beta will go to, the image will be alpha to the m alpha m minus 1 beta, alpha m minus 2 beta square, beta m. So that will be the image of this symmetric power representation. Okay? So in this case, you can define symmetric mth symmetric power L function locally. So that will be, so according to, so that will be product of I equals 0 to M, 1 minus alpha V, M minus I, beta V, I, cube V minus S to the inverse. So that that's the local L function. So let me not confuse this. Okay. So that's the local L function. Now we collect this. So let denote, let LS, S pi R to be the partial L function. So we take a infinite product. We take an infinite product, okay, and Langmuir show that this is absolutely convergent. So this is the theorem of Langmuir. So this is absolutely convergent. For real S is bigger than, it's big. So this we call a partial function, and this is absolutely convergent for real S is big. Very, so you have, in this right half plane, it will be absolutely convergent. That means that defines a holomorphic function. Okay? And Langmuir's conjecture that this has an analytic continuation to the whole complex plane, and it satisfies functional equation. So that's the conjecture of Langmuir. So let me write down the conjecture and then I'll finish that. Okay. Anyway, yeah, this is very general. This is all is very general function. So the following is the conjecture of Langmuir. Okay, so we fix psi to be the additive character. So this is the character of the ideal. Okay, so this is necessary to define local root numbers. So remember that this local L function is right now defined only for spherical representation. Okay, so the conjecture is that for each bad place, we can define a local L function, so let me still denote by this. So this will be local L function at bad place will be different from the spherical representation. So this will be of the form, P to the cube V minus S inverse. Here where PX is the polynomial with the constant term 1. And a local root number and a local epsilon factor. So let me denote by epsilon S pi V R psi V. So this will be a monomial in Q to the minus S, such that the full L function, so then now we can write down this is a Fourier function. So all V has a metamorphic continuation. To all of C and satisfies a functional equation. Of the following form, S pi R is epsilon R L 1 minus S pi R tilde. Here, R tilde is the contra gradient representation. So, contra gradient representation is R tilde G is R G transpose inverse. So, R G belongs to the G L and C. So, you can define the transpose inverse. And epsilon S pi R is the product of the epsilon factors. So remember that this is almost all places this is 1. So this is actually a finite product. So okay, so this is the conjecture. And psi is necessary in order to define the epsilon factor, local place. And but this product will be independent of psi. Okay, so this is the conjecture, and let me make one remark, and then anyway, the metamorphic continuation, and I always thought that this is trivial, but I found that it's not that obvious. So, this is absolutely convergent, so it is a holomorphic function here. So now, problem of continuing to the whole complex plane is not obvious, because you have to multiply almost all primes. So for example, if you look at the Riemann zeta function, this is the product of all primes. So if you take only half of the primes, so if you take, so let's look at the half of the primes. So let's say you take P congruent to 1 modulo 4, for example. So this is clearly a holomorphic function for real S. So this is absolutely convergent for real S bigger than 1. So this will be holomorphic function here. And somebody proved that, I think it's Kurokawa, proved that you can continue only up to 0 in this line. So the real equals S equals 0. So this is the natural boundary. So this does not have a metamorphic continuation. To all of C. So real S equal 0 is the natural boundary. Yeah. So you have to multiply all primes, to have this statement, metamorphic continuation. Okay. This is a conjecture, and this is far from proved. So there are two ways of studying this conjecture. So one is the integral representation technique. So basically, you write down, you can express this R function as an integral of something. So for example, so I have a few minutes, right? I have a few minutes. Okay, now. So there are two ways of studying studying the conjecture, studying the automorphic L functions. Anyway, so these kind of objects are called automorphic L functions. So one way is method of integral representations. So sometimes this is called the Rankine-Seiberg method. It started by basically Riemann and goes back to Riemann and Hecke and Rallis, Bump, and these people are all working on. So basically the idea is the follows. So basically you can write this Riemann zeta function. Actually Ramuti already talked about this. You can write this as an integral of this theta series, gx over dx over x. So gx is now, this is a theta series, e to the minus n squared pi x. So this is it's a kind of theta series. So this kind of technique can be generalized in that's generalized. So sometimes you put the Eisenstein series here. Sometimes you put the cusp form, you integral against Eisenstein series. And then you get the L function come out. And we have the analytic continuation and all kinds of analytic properties are contained in here. Contained in actually integrand. Because the integrand here satisfies functional equation. So that carries over to this L functions. Okay. But the problem is that in many cases, you have L function here. You write down some integral of something. But sometimes the L function itself doesn't come out. You have something, always something come out here. And this integral behaves well, is entire and behaves well. But now proving that this is non-vanishing, this is usually the fact that the Archimedean places, and proving that that's non-vanishing is really painful in the subject. And they have not been successful in except for special cases. So that's what causing the proving that this is entire. Okay? So now second method is, which I'm going to explain from next week. So this is called Langlands-Shahid method. So Langlands-Shahid method is that, so Langlands is the first one to realize that the sum of these R's, sum of these L functions, not all, just the sum, can show up in the constant term of Eisenstein series. Okay. So the properties of the Eisenstein series will give this conjecture. So because Eisenstein series has a metamorphic continuation and the functional equation, so that will translate it into properties of this L function. So from next time, so I'm going to explain what the Langlands-Shahid method is. So in order to do that, I have to explain first what the induced representations are and what the Eisenstein series are, and I have to calculate the constant term and non-constant term, and then I have to analyze the intertwining operators. So that will be the course of this lecture.